This is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Welcome back, and hang tight, because you're about to hear from Christopher Lauren, the author of Unspirituality, Permission to be Human. While I agreed with many of Christopher's points, I firmly disagree with the Darwin's macroevolutionary paradigm, which for many does not satisfactorily account for things such as life's rapid start on Earth, or the evolutionary impossibility of the Cambrian explosion, or the fact that there are no fossils of partially evolved species to indicate that a gradual process of evolution even occurred. Even among evolutionists, there are very different interpretations and reconstructions of the fossils used to support human evolution from a supposed ape-like ancestry. And then there's the fact that many genes appear older by sequence analysis than they should be according to the fossil record. Variations across biological kinds, such as humans evolving from ape-like creatures and apes in turn evolving from dog-like creatures and so on, as Darwinian theory teaches, are not possible unless nature has the capability of performing genetic engineering. Biological variations are determined by the DNA or genetic code of species. Then we have some animals' abilities that are too complex to be explained by the evolutionary process. Another problem is how could partially evolved plant and animal species survive over millions of years when their basic organs and tissues were still in the process of evolving? Yet it has been well established that in all chromosome comparisons between chimps and humans, the differences average 2 to 3%. Yet the difference between the Y chromosomes is 30%. Although Darwin's primate theory is the thread throughout Christopher's book, we'll mainly focus on his concept of unspirituality and the delusion of a spiritual self and its story. Christopher Lauren, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you, Lana.
So why don't we start off by you telling us about your journey and your intentions for writing the book Unspirituality, Permission to be Human.
Okay. Well, it's a long story, and it's actually working on the story, which is a book entitled Unspiritual, A Spiritual Journey, which is my, what I call my 30-year journey through Christianity and metaphysics, which culminated in a human awakening rather than a spiritual awakening, which was quite surprising for me because I really wasn't expecting it. I had suspicions along the way, but I wasn't suspecting it. I had never put my eyes on evolution. I never studied evolution. I never studied brain science. Being a spiritual being and having a human experience is all I knew. I mean, from the time I was a child, I was born into the Orthodox tradition. So it started off with Catholicism, and then we went into the Worldwide Church of God. And so I was raised very, very strict, strict Christian upbringing. Like in the Worldwide Church of God, we had to, you know, follow the feast days, and certain days we had a fast, and our Sabbath was on Saturdays, and you know, we couldn't do anything on Saturdays. We couldn't celebrate Christmas, Easter, any of these things. So I was really kind of like in a mini cult, mm-hmm. you know, in my family setting. So I really like, and I was an avid, you know, I was a little book nerd as a small kid, and I spent a lot of time in libraries. That's kind of where I went to get away from the family craziness and the religious manipulation and all of that. And so as I got older, I was raised in Glendale, California, which is near, you know, of course, in L.A.
Yeah, I know it.
And so I got involved in the whole sex, drugs, and rock and roll gig, and had a band and was playing some gigs in Hollywood, and I was really engaged in that scene for quite a while. But what it led to me really being really, really miserable with my world, and it culminated in was a born again experience at the age of 19. Now it's interesting because I was raised Christian, mm-hmm. but it wasn't until I really reached a place inside myself at 19 where I was feeling suicidal that I ended up, and this is a long story, and it's why I need to write it, why I felt suicidal, and it has a lot to do with the being raised in a narcissistic environment. And, you know, being under the thumb of the Orthodox bullying, which is really what it is.
Mm-hmm. What do you think that does to the psyche of a child?
It splits them in two. I think what it does is it creates a what I call a socially acceptable schizophrenic, because it does a lot of things. That's one of the things it does. When you're taught that you are, first of all, born in sin, and that you're basically, you know, right off the bat, you're rejected from the entire universe, and that you have to accept a blood sacrifice, a human sacrifice, to somehow be in the good graces of God, I think that's teaching that to children is abusive. And what it does is, I think, instantaneously, it makes a child, it's insinuating that you're not okay. So all of a sudden, they jump on this treadmill of having to do things to become okay. So there's a word I'm looking for, and it's evading me right now. But anyway, so... So also, when the parents believe this, and they're teaching this to their children, and they've already have this split going on, where they feel that they have to abide by these religious rules in order for them to feel connected to the universe. So, they don't even feel okay, and so that feeling is already there in the parents, and so that's transmitted to the child through, through emotions, through connection, however they're communicating with the child. And of course, this depends on what degree of belief a family has. I mean, some families are much more intense than others. Some it's a little lighter. But anyway, the belief, it immediately invalidates the young human primate, And so what I like to say in my book is, we're born with everything we need. We're born with love. We're mammals. And it took us 6 million years for each one of us to be born, in this time.
Do you know when the word spirituality began surfacing?
Oh, I'd have to look back in my book exactly what I wrote there. But, The whole idea of spirituality is that, it's this idea that you're a spiritual being and you have a whole spiritual story. Mm-hmm. And so what I touch on in the book is that when we began to become self-conscious, when our brains developed to a point where we became self-conscious of death. And so we began to wonder, where do our relatives go? Where do the people go? And so we started creating death rituals, and we started creating a story. But what that did is it relieved death anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so, as I describe in my book, that the birth of the spiritual being, no matter what tradition it is an identity that the human primate creates. And this identity does not die. It's a little superman, little super spirit that basically can break all the laws of physics. It chose to come here. While it's here, all of its friends are walking on water and being raised from the dead. And then it's got big plans for when it leaves. So I also graduate that idea in the book that I get into a thing called divine narcissism. Where, I say that, I think that the stories and the myths of mankind have been a stepping stone from tooth and claw to Facebook. But now it's a problem. Because now, with the science that we have, it's been emerging over the past 100 years and more, we know things now that make the old way of looking at things really elementary. And so what's the problem now is that people are trapped in the story, and they're identified with this object called a spiritual being that they believe themselves to be. And so, a big part of what I'm writing about is helping people to wake up like I did, because I spent, when I had the born-again experience at 19, that's when I initiated my quest for truth. And so that began a 30-year, and I mean 24/7 need to know. I don't know if now is the time to really, get into this very, very deeply, but I can tell you that I was on a mission, and there's a some people are born and for whatever reasons have this insane desire to seek. Not everybody has it, but I'm one of those people for whatever reason. And so this was a 30-year need to know, tearing through every book I could find and working my way into really saying, hey, am I a spiritual being? And I also had out-of-body experiences from the time I was four.
So what did you think those were?
Well, I wasn't sure along the way. I was exploring these things because I could pop into, you know, I could wake up in my room and look around, and then, you know, there were other times when I found myself on the top of the Empire State Building. And
so was that a spiritual experience, or do you think that was your imagination?
Well, that's where I came to with it is there's a book by Thomas Metzinger called The Ego Tunnel. And so when I started studying, I wrote Unspirituality in the beginning of 2013. So all of this really started to come together for me over the past three, four years. And so I really started studying brain science because I was tinkering with the whole spiritual being thing for 30 years. You know, I'm like, I don't care. It's, you know, it's not so much about what I want. I want to know what's true.
So you probably studied Persinger's God Helmet as well, right?
Oh, yeah. But this was really cool because when I started getting into naturalism and atheism, and I don't consider myself an atheist. I'm promoting humanity. I'm a human. I'm a primate. But I'm totally fine with the atheist movement. I think it's dynamite. It's wonderful. They're promoting reason. It's awesome. But as I started to like contemplate the idea of evolution and brain science, all of a sudden this huge door opened up. And because I had only been looking at things, I had been studying everything from theosophy to, you know, I mean, Madame Blavatsky to Elizabeth Clare Prophet to Seth to Sri Aurobindo to Aleister Crowley, Israeli Regardi, the Matrix series by Val Valerian. I mean, I could go on and on and on and on. I went really, really deep. And I actually got into each one of these spiritual modalities, and I tried them on for size. And I would experiment, and I would explore, and look at the reality through them. But when I got to brain science, man, I was just having a blast. I was like, oh, I know that. Oh, I know that. Oh, I understand that. And that started making sense. And one of the questions I had about out-of-body experiences is when I'm out, right, how come the room looks accurate, right, for the most part, but I turn to the left and there's my living room, the living room from my childhood home. Or maybe there is a whole different thing there that isn't accurate. So I really started to wonder, I go, well, if we're using the physical body as sort of a measuring stick, to use the terms out of body, well, then if you're really out of body, then the rest of the physical world should be reflecting accurately. If not, it's very suspicious of the subjective.
Yeah, consciousness is such a mysterious thing. I mean, there's a lot of scientists that don't know jack about it yet.
Right, right. But the things that, because I had spent so much time working on it from the other end, when I started studying brain science, I like really quickly knew what they were talking about. And so I began to compare both sides, you know, both sides of the argument, you know, is the brain a conduit of consciousness or is the brain producing consciousness? And I mean, I'm looking at my library right now. I have a whole shelf of books on one topic and a whole shelf of books on the other topic. And I lean towards that human primates are producing the spiritual experience.
Have you looked into Lloyd Pye's work by any chance and the intervention theory? Because a lot of times when it comes to evolution, people always think it's either God or nature, but then there could be a third variable, of course.
No, I haven't.
A panspermia type of effect. Yeah, you should look into it. He has some pretty valid points as well.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm definitely open to listen and explore new things. I'm just expressing my experience with this whole God thing and how much, you know, the natural world is really, really amazing, and it really dwarfs the spiritual story. I mean, the more I understand about, and I have a chapter called Unfathomable Evolution, the more I understand about our evolution, I mean, think about it. Like, we've had 4.6 billion years growing organically, every one of us through the same genetic tree. I mean, what's not spectacular about that? And every one of us are actually connected. We're connected to the plants. We're connected to animals. You know, this is an organic process.
But why are we so disconnected from nature then, if this is there?
Oh, I'd say a big part of it is we're trapped in our subjective religion and spirituality. We're trapped in the contents of our subjective rather than understanding it as a language. It's local. See, we tend to project the things that are arising within us or project them out in the world. And we also think that because we see this inner landscape and we feel what's going on inside here, we project it on the world and we say that's what's going on out in the world. And what I'm saying is, no, this is actually local. This is a local phenomenon within you, inside your body. And see what happens is people, like when people tend to wake up from spirituality or religion, they tend to go into the materialist camp, mm-hmm. and they throw subjective out.
Sure.
And I'm like, sorry, you know, it's like I spent 30 years. I've had rich, amazing, synchronistic experiences. I mean, I've had just as many as just like anyone else in the spiritual path. I'm very familiar with very magical experiences. So there's no way I was going to throw that out and just become a materialist. But then I started looking at, you know, I started seeing that, you know, people look at, you know, evolution, they look at our human bodies, but I'm like, how about it took 6 million years to grow an imagination? And when I started to look at that, I thought, you know, think about how much natural selection was going through and growing humans and making mistakes. And I mean, this is a long, radically long period of time. And when I started to look at our kaleidoscope of emotions and our vast imagination, it really clicked for me that I now see what we tend to assign into spiritual realms or invisible places, always projecting it out there. I say it's inside of us, and it's a product of our evolution.
I think we should define some of those, what terms we're using for spirituality. I mean, is it religion? Is it new age? Is it quantum consciousness? Is it channeling? What is spirituality?
Well, I think it's simply our subjective world. It's our feelings, our thoughts, our emotions. And I think how we create spirituality and why we have to have all these names for it and stuff is our beliefs about it and how we project it out into the world. One thing we don't understand, that's a blanket statement, but what a lot of people don't understand, and I live in Sedona, and there's some fascinating, amazing people here, and there's a lot of people that are, I see them as still sort of very strong believers, not much different than you know, believers that I knew in the Orthodox tradition.
Do you think the metaphysical is different from spirituality?
It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's all the same stuff. Yeah. You know, I mean, I, you know, in the last chapter of my book, I dedicated it to the focusing method by Eugene Gendlin, which is a method that I've learned to use in my life. And so I really wanted to give my readers a tool. And I really like the tool. It's just a very clean tool. And what it is it's basically learning how to communicate to that which is arising within you. No matter what it is, whether it is a positive, good feeling, or a negative, bad feeling, our insights are constantly communicating to us through archetypes, through, you know, just like dreams. Mm-hmm. You know, we dream at night. We close our eyes. We go into this place. Another interesting thing about when we dream is we actually disappear for hours an evening during every night, which I find really interesting because there's nobody that's, I mean, there's no consciousness whatsoever.
Yeah.
But we dream, and so our biology is creating, you know, this movement of story and shape. And I think what's happening there, I tend to think that it's the movement of the dream that's more important than the content and the definition of the dream. Because I think that dreams are a movement inside of whatever our bodies are needing to do. But when we wake up, we tend to think that we're not dreaming anymore. But if one were to slow down a little bit and take a look at what thoughts are arising and what they're feeling, and kind of move, just become a little more sensitive to what's actually there, if we find out that we're actually, this activity is still going on throughout the day. And so focusing is teaching how to understand the language of the subjective, because we see and we experience the universe through our thoughts and feelings. And what Jean Genlin is saying, which I love this, is that this is almost like the language of the future. Like we need to understand the language of the subjective and how it's communicating to us. And this is what I think spirituality is pointing to. The older systems are all projecting our fantasies out on the landscape of the world. And so I would put that right there under the umbrella of everything metaphysical. Because the other thing is if you listen to just about anybody in the New Age movement that's talking New Agey stuff, it's basic theosophy regurgitated. There's nothing original about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to hear about what is your own original unfolding in this moment right now? Give me something totally in this moment that's fresh content that's arising within you. That to me is the quote unquote power of now, or whatever one wants to call it. So the other stuff is like, it's a yawn. I mean, when I hear Bashar, or I hear, they have the Ashtar command is big out here. And
yeah, that one's funny.
You know, yeah, and it's like people start talking. Seriously, I don't want to be rude, but it's like blah, 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 blah. I mean, come on. Seth was babbling this, you know, decades ago. Let's come up with something more interesting.
Yeah, it doesn't always have much depth or authenticity to it, unfortunately. And then there's those people who keep thinking they're the incarnation of Magdalene, Isis, or Cleopatra.
Right? Yeah. How about somebody really cool that's an unsung hero? You know, that's why I say the other thing, too, is spirituality really kind of hijacks the natural world. And it takes the limelight off of all of the heroes, you know. If one just ponders how many heroic mothers have we had over the past 200,000 years, you know, how many unsung heroes, how many amazing people that were more amazing than Gandhi, but just didn't get noticed. You know, and so we have these religious icons that everybody is talking about. And it's like, sometimes I just, you know, one of the teachings of the Buddha is, when you see the Buddha on the road, kill him. You know, for those that don't understand that, what he's saying there is that, you know, it's your image in your head of God that is the final obstruction. Or it's your image of anything that's real. Even the image
Joseph
of your
Campbell
girlfriend.
Said that too. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, one of my favorites. And but even an image of your girlfriend or your boyfriend, if you get an image, you're dealing with, you know, you have to understand who people actually are. But anyway, so you get my point. Is like, people are always pointing to these iconic leaders, and it's always taking the picture off of humans, because human primates. It's almost like a prejudice. And I have actually a whole chapter on this in my book. It's like I call it the new prejudice. It's just been sort of like under. It's sort of been hidden in a way. But it's like, human beings are not okay unless they unless they're a spiritual being. You know, what is wrong with the human primate? And here's another thought.
There's plenty of people that don't think like that, though.
What's that?
There's plenty of people that aren't spiritual and don't believe that that's real, that are more a part of the natural world, but our planet's still a mess.
Exactly, but they're still doing, yeah, so altruistic acts happen all the time from people that just care, because they're part of this whole species. I mean, why do we care? You know, why does caring happen? You know, I don't think it's because somebody sits around and it comes up, they come up with a nice idea. You know, I think that they're compelled, you know. There's a connection, there's a feeling that's connected. But, you know, why is our world in the shape it is? Well, that's one of the reasons why I'm doing my work. One of the big problems is religion. One of the big problems is that we're identified, we have 7 billion people that are trapped in their subjective, identified with the contents of their subjective. And they haven't even awoken up to themselves as a species. And, you know, Darwin's only 150 years old. I mean, that's like, in the evolutionary timeline, that's like a nanosecond ago. So I think that the more that our civilization awakens and validates who they are, the wonderful primate they are, and they really awaken to that, and then they begin to really, really value the radically curious human beings whom we call scientists that have helped us make quantum leaps. You know, it wasn't prayer that did it. It's been radically curious human beings that have helped us come out of the dark ages. I think we're gonna see ourselves growing into a really amazing society. I mean, we're heading into Star Trek land, and we're heading into seeding the stars. You know, so we really are like, you know, I think this is just a very essential, important stepping stone, is that humanity has to wake up as a species and realize that all the subjective experiences that they've been experiencing through spirituality and religion are still there, even as a primate.
But isn't science also a form of religion? I don't put much faith in mainstream science whatsoever. I think that there is a bigger conspiracy at work, so they're not going to really let you know the true origins of humanity and put it out there. I mean, those are pearls.
Well, I would disagree. I would say that maybe some. We've had bad scientists in the past, but everything that I have this on my website, and Carl Sagan got into this, but if you take a look at what science has given us, the technology it's given us, the medical breakthroughs it's given us. Now, look, I'm not saying it in the sense of let's hail science as a new religion. Science is simply a way of thinking about life and not making assumptions, and I'm not allowing one person to dominate everybody else through their own subjective perception. This is why we have peer review research, you know?
Sure, and for every theory, there's a counter theory. Like Tesla didn't agree with the relativity theories at all. There's Bruce Lipton's out there, Rupert Sheldrake, Walter Russell. There's always a counter theory for everything. So what is true?
Exactly. But we know certain things that are true because we're seeing it in the evidence that occurs. I mean, right now, when it comes to evolution, we have more evidence for evolution than we have that the world is no longer flat. And we actually have DNA evidence for it. I mean, it's absurd. I mean, people that have not, I mean, if we're not, people still haven't caught up to the amount of evidence we have for evolution. But that's just one thing. There's all sorts of things. I mean, it's just simply a method. What continues to work? I mean, who makes cars? We figured out certain cars work better than other cars. It doesn't matter who agrees or disagrees about what. We know that this certain car works. We know that this certain vaccine works. This certain vaccine doesn't work. I don't think it's about developing some sort of oligarchy of scientists. I think it's about...
It's kind of happened that way, though, unfortunately.
I think that it's peaked out in the past, but I also think that there's some amazing scientists in this world, some amazing, awesome people that are, you know, in some ways just as spiritually minded and very in tune. I mean, I know a number of personal scientists myself, and they're amazing people. You know, they're just radically curious human beings. But the scientific method, or the, you know, it's a sure shot way of not living your life in a way where you're taking action on simply assumptions.
Didn't science come from the church originally, though? It has its origin is in religion.
The Protestant movement? I'm not, you know what, I'd have to look into that. But from what my understanding is, science was always challenging the church. And really, I could simplify that. You know, the church has always had like this authoritarian, you know, think the way we want you to think. And the heart of science was people thinking for themselves. And so they basically disagreed with their dictates. And, you know, if you look at, you follow the track of religious thinking, it's always based on something that's invisible. You know, and so people are still doing it now. Channelers are doing it. I mean, what a great way to manipulate people. As long as it's invisible, you don't have to take any responsibility for it. And you can say anything you want. to anybody about whatever. And if you ever get challenged with it, you don't have to take any responsibility. And that's how they've been manipulating human primates for eons. It's the same with narcissists. You know, I mean, it's like, it's a very manipulative game and very convenient to come from a place of invisible realities and being certain. I think it's very, very arrogant, you know.
I'm not picking fights with you at all, but definitely look into the intervention theory.
There are so many theories. And one thing that I have found about some of the rogue theories is that typically if you do a little digging with a lot of these rogue theories, you'll find that these scientists already have a bias, like they already are dualists. They already believe in dualists and they're trying to prove dualism. Look, if somebody comes up with evidence that we're invisible beings operating human bodies and that we fly around in other dimensions, fine. Maybe my book will be like, you know, maybe it helps people, you know, spark more questions. But here's the thing. 97% of the scientists, and these aren't stupid people. They're men and women, radically curious, intelligent men and women that feel. 97% of them, just in America alone, accept evolution as a fact. And on a micro level, evolution is a fact now. It's not in question. On a macro level, there's still some areas that they need to connect to the dots, but. I would love for you to send me the link there, and I'm more interested in truth than what I wish to be true.
Sure, yeah.
So well, Lloyd, I would love for you to
anaerobic microbes, the Cambrian explosion, and Miocene apes. He puts forth some awesome stuff. You have to check out his work.
Okay.
He's not a rogue scientist, and he's not a woo-woo spiritual new age guy at all. So then what is it to be human?
To be exactly what you are.
Because some people feel that having a spirit is part of being human, that it's just another facet of themselves.
Yeah, well, where does that idea come from?
Well, you can't be sure if it comes from religion.
Well,
maybe it was part of humans from the beginning.
Well, look at our history. Look at Descartes, the ghost in the machine.
Sure, but there's people that are older than Descartes that have, I'm sure, just because it's not written doesn't mean that people haven't thought about it before.
Well, if you look, actually you go further and further back into our ancient mythos, you'll find that many of the definitions for spirit were actually very physical, like wind. You'll also find that you look at the cradle of humanity and what we grew out of, we're really kind of growing up out of being infants. It's kind of like when you're a child and you have an imaginary friend. You grow up and discover that your imaginary friend isn't real on your own, simply by, you know, your own experience. And what eventually that does is your vast imagination that you've had an opportunity to explore as a child, you know, if you were raised with parents that were very caring and loving and allowed you your own autonomy, your own subjective autonomy, you grow up and you learn for yourself. And then you find you become a productive human being, and you have a vast imagination, but you're using it for creativity. You're using it for, you know, helping in the best scenario. You're using it to create scenario, create new, solving problems in the world. You know, so we have this vast imagination that I say matures from children, and so I say it's the same thing as a species. You know, if you look at all the old ancient mythos, I mean, nowadays there's just so many things that people believed. I mean, come on, it's comical. It's like children. They were children. You know, we know that people don't walk on water, and we know that. I mean, there's so many stories from the past. You know, we know that the sun doesn't go around the earth. We know the earth is no longer flat. I mean, there's all these things that in all these stories and mythologies that we used to believe. And so now that people or humanity has really begun to think for themselves, question reality and not just adopt what we're spoon fed from the past, you know, I think that we're slowly but surely growing up.
Yeah, and there are people who are questioning a lot that's coming out of school, because that's another indoctrination center that's basically forcing kids into another world, just like religion does.
Yeah, the dualism I'm specifically talking about is when somebody teaches a child that they're an invisible being operating a human body, however that's brought across. I consider that to be abusive to a child. Because the natural human primate has everything it needs. It's perfectly happy in its environment. And it doesn't need to be split off into a subjective identity. And in my opinion, when they are, there's problems there. I mean, you know, when we're identified with any sort of aspect within ourself, whether it's a good aspect or a negative aspect, and especially through trauma, we begin to see ourselves through that mirror. And you know, as we grow up, we become more invested into this mirror, this whole process, you know, needs to feed to stay alive, because you're no longer, if you're identified with this image of yourself, whether I'm a really bad kid or an image of, oh, I'm a super duper kid, as long as it's an image, you're living, another way of saying this is being trapped in the mirror. And so this develops a form of narcissism. But when a child is loved and is playing in the moment and is enjoying the natural world with their parents, and they grow up in such a way that they're living in the natural world, the now moment isn't some destination to get to. They just naturally are enjoying their intelligence that's unfolding in the moment. So that's just a little just touching a little bit on narcissism and
why do you think theosophy keeps returning? Why do we keep going back to it? Why is mythology full of stories of gods and goddesses time and time again?
Well, it's been inundated in our culture. It's like, I think we're slowly growing out of it, but it wasn't too long ago. I mean, just go back 100 years ago, go back 200 years ago, and look what people believed and what they thought about the universe and life. Go back 3 or 4. I mean, it's like, talk about going into, caveman days in regards to consciousness. So we've really done a quantum leap, in the 20th century. So yeah, why? Is because, you know, we've been swimming in it for eons. we're slowly coming out of it, you know.
Do you think evolution is a mistake? Is it a plan? Is it a coincidence? What is it?
It is. You know, it just is. It is life. It is life doing what life does, and we're going to know more 100 years from now and 200 years from now. I'm just not interested in making assumptions on the whole game, nor do I need the answer right now. I would like it, but, you know, we're evolving. All I can do is go by what we know. And try to clear out the things that aren't true, that we know aren't true, the difference between our fantasies, our subjective fantasies, things we want, and things that we're learning that are more accurate to what the universe is.
So if you have a child, where are you going to tell them where they come from?
Came from me and mom. The obvious.
No deeper human origins?
What? Why? Why would I want to invalidate the glory, the beauty of me and her as human primates that grew out of the earth? I don't need to see that. What I loved about this is I don't no longer need a concept called Gaia. I don't need ideas, spiritual concepts, as if I'm separate and need these ideas to make me feel good. I know. We have the DNA evidence now. I know I grew out of the earth. I know who I am. And so, yes, and I can, and I also, as a primate, I'm a creator too. I can create children. I can be with somebody and I can create a child. Well, you know, these philosophical ideas about, I mean, it's kind of funny. It's so obvious to me. It's like, where'd you come from? You know, my mom and dad. But I think I also have a chapter called Obsession with the Invisible, where I've noticed this. Too, and again, I'm not somebody that wasn't a spiritual person who's come into this from the outside. You know, I know this stuff very well. I've been in it myself. This is just what's happened to me. This is the awakening that I've had out from, 30 years in this. So, you know, there's an obsession with the visible, I say, as well. where life, for some reason, just can't be what it is. This is energy. It's all energy. And I like to say to people sometimes, I go, okay, well, when you leave your body and you go into another dimension or you go up into heaven, you know, what are you going to do then when you see the forms there? You're going to go, well, there's got to be something invisible behind these forms. And then you go into the next phase of it. And I mean, where do you end up? To where it's all clear and there's nothing, you can't see anything, you're just pure energy. I mean, you know, we could speculate forever. And we could also speculate about, you know, was the universe made from nothing? But that argument ends too, because nothing can't make, I mean, if there's nothing, there has to be a something to make something. So it can't be made from nothing because there's nothing there. So, you know, I'm perfectly happy saying that I don't know, but I do know more and more that I am nature. I'm not separate. And in fact, I would argue that I don't really have, there's no me that's in control of any of this as well.
Do you think we have an unconscious self?
Oh, I think our whole body is the mind. So I think
How do we prove that?
How do I prove it?
Yeah. How do we prove we have an unconscious self?
Well, I wouldn't use that terminology. I mean, we know that there are lots of things functioning that you, I mean, you're not, you know, you're not like, while you're talking to me or listening to me, deciding each heartbeat, right?
No.
Right, yeah. And so you're not really choosing breath, you're being breathed. Would that be?
Yeah, that's an unconscious act, I guess, but it must be conscious in there somewhere.
Right. And so this is a big part of what I talk about in the book, about a volitional self. And this is also one of the big, great realizations of Advaita. You know, and these teachers such as Nisargadatta and Ramesh, Ramana, is that they really ultimately find there is no volitional I, and there is no author, no personal author. And when you begin to look at some of the brain science, like some of the research out of the Max Planck Institute in Germany, where they found out that we actually become conscious, you know, just after the region of the brain fires off for that particular thought. So when you get into, you know, one of the things about the spiritual self and whatever version of it is, you know, whether it's the Mormons or, you know, Islam or it's Christianity or it's theosophy or whatever it is, you have entered into a volitional self that's choosing to come here, chose, if it experiences rape, it chose to be raped. If someone else, it makes explanations for the world, like the Holocaust, all those people chose to go through that experience. And so to me, this is dangerous ideology. I'm trying to paint the picture that, you know, once you have a volitional self that's in charge of the game, you have all manner of sort of subjective delusions that arise out of that. And we could just take Eckhart Tolle's Power of Now. When you really get into that space, really understand that, I just took it to the next step. I said, well, how about I'm just a primate? And then for some reason, by me admitting that, I realized, wow, it was like I had a big load taken off of my shoulders. I was free to be a human primate. It was just free. I didn't have to compare myself to any spiritual teacher. I didn't have to be on the treadmill. And because I had been in Advaita for years prior to this realization, I had already had the experience of that what is occurring has nothing to do with the idea that we have free will. I think that is an illusion, although it's a persistent one. And we use it and we function in it. But I think when we really get down to it, we aren't in control of any of this. We are actually life itself as the natural world having a primate experience. But what we tend to do in religious thinking is we call it a higher self. And so we assign it to a higher self, that whole surrendering. But see, I don't need any of the spiritual teaching to redefine the same experience from a natural perspective.
So do you think that there might be an active conspiracy to bamboozle our current view of spirituality? A lot of people have talked about the invention of Jesus Christ, for instance.
Well, there's a lot of evidence for that Jesus is a total fabrication. You know, a lot of evidence for that. The Christ Conspiracy is a great book. And there's a new guy out that...
Joseph Atwill.
Is that his name?
Yeah. Roman conspiracy to invent Jesus. It goes into the Flavians and the Jewish sects. Yeah.
Right. But to me, it's so silly, this Jesus thing. I mean, really, a 2,000-year-old Jewish zombie that's living up in outer space? I mean, we, each one of us, are so amazing just in ourselves. Why are we still pointing to this guy? Did anyone ever consider that maybe Jesus wishes he was you? You know, each one of us is the only version that life is in this moment. Why are we assigning everything that's wonderful about ourselves to something invisible? Really? I mean, if you do something good, it's God. If you do something good, it's my angels and my spirits. But anything bad has to do with you as a primate. And I argue that I'm saying that no, human primates are amazing creatures. And all of these things that we project and we hand over to the invisible, metaphysical, whatever, all that's showing me is that human primates have an amazing creative imagination. And I think they should start taking credit for who they are and stop giving it to invisible realms. That invisible realm is really your subjective experience. It's just that your thoughts are transparent, you know?
It's kind of like the chicken or the egg, the spirit or the body. How did we come to have a concept of self at all?
Well, yeah, I think when we became cognitive of, you know, like we die, you know, it was brain development, you know? You know, we grew. The spiritual self, the dualism, this came along as we evolved. You know what I mean? As we became self-conscious. So we just took all of our, like, thoughts and all of our inner stuff that's going on, we got trapped in it. We don't know what we knew now. So we created stories and myths, and I mean, it's kind of obvious, you know, if you look at just Joseph Campbell's work, you know, you see what's common about all cultures around the world is that they all have a brain, and that they all have an imagination, and they also, you'll notice that their stories are reflections of their environment, you
sure.
know. So whatever environment they grew up, like the Native Americans is a beautiful tradition, you know, a beautiful tradition where, you know, they took their subjective jewels that they learned and they passed them on to their children, which is a tragedy that the New Age went in and really plagiarized that tradition. And I actually have a little section in my book where I touch on that. But I think that also the reason why Americans did that and grabbed hold of the Native American tradition is because, you know, we're inundated with Christianity, and evolution, for the most part, I think, is just not understood. So Western man doesn't feel connected. And this is why I'm saying this is such an important message, that we understand who we are as a species and that we grew out of the same genetic tree and we grew out of the earth. I think it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard. And so then we feel connected, but it isn't a story or an idea. We have evidence. We have overwhelming evidence for this.
Yeah, well, there's evidence of all kinds of bones that have been around and even overlapping time frames of different creatures and human-like, ape-like. So there's a lot more mystery than we know or that we've solved. I wouldn't say that we have it all figured out.
No, there's a lot of fun things to speculate about, but what I'm saying is in regards to human evolution, it is really not, I mean, it's not something scientists are thinking or sitting around going, is this true or not? I mean, it just isn't. This is a very, very well established fact about our origins.
Yeah, because it seems like the dawn of consciousness seemed to occur pretty fast from an evolutionary perspective, tools, art, rituals, etc. So what happened? What sparked it off? For millions of years, there's a pre-human ape-like creature, and then bang, we have civilization. I mean,
right?
What the hell was that?
Well, you know what's fascinating is on a evolutionary timeline, mankind just showed up a few seconds ago.
Yeah.
And we think we're so special. You know what I mean? I mean, I think we need to understand ourselves as special as a species. And we really need to love each other and care for each other and really support each other and really see ourselves surviving as a species and be looking towards the future to see the stars. Because most likely the universe is teeming with life. You know, evolution, I would be shocked if it, I mean, it's only obvious to me that it's happening all over the place. So I think that's just the general direction.
So how would you redefine metaphysical realities in light of this material world?
That it's being created by our biology. Okay. And we just misunderstand it, you know. Something as simple as the whole create your own reality business, you know. I mean, sure, you focus on what you want, you'll begin seeing the things that you want. Not like they all of a sudden popped out of nowhere magically. We're pattern seekers. So if you decide you want a yellow VW, and especially if you really want a yellow VW, like you really want one, you know, you have a strong emotional investment into that, all of a sudden you will magically begin noticing them everywhere. Now, the person who is metaphysical and has stepped into an area where they're believing their subjective fantasies more than the natural world, may be tempted to say that the universe manifests them out of nowhere, just like the person that says, "When the moon, I don't look at the moon, the moon's no longer there." An easy way to look at this is, you know, if you spread your arms out both directions, and on the left side you will call the sane people, and on the right side you'll call these crazy people. Well, we put crazy people, we lock them up in crazy houses because they don't know the difference between their subjective and the natural world. They'll walk up to their mother and say, "Hi, you're Billy, I need to kill you," you know. So we lock those people away to protect ourselves. And on the other spectrum, you have people that are well-grounded in the natural world, and they understand the real world here, the actual facts of the real world. But they're also extremely creative human beings as well. And then there's a whole, you know, there's a whole spectrum in the middle of that. So I'm all for having a blast with exploring, exploring metaphysics. But I can do it now from a more solid place. You know, I say, like, you want to manifest stuff? Try manifesting an apple by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, given to you by a particular person. Try taking a trip into the desert, sitting on top of a sand dune, and seeing if you can manifest a veggie burrito. You know, you could start playing around with these things and see exactly where this stuff actually works and doesn't work. But typically people, I find, they read, they take in a teacher's teachings, and they swallow the whole thing. And so I think that one can easily get caught up in manifestation and get very disappointed after a while.
Hey, what do you think about the psychic phenomena? What category do you put that into?
Simply that if I was to meet you right now in person, okay? Immediately, what I call my mind is my entire body. Is going to be reading all sorts of things about you. Facial expression, eyes, there's going to be a feeling, a sense, all sorts of things going on. This is my entire biology, which has been around a long time, reading yours and vice versa. I don't need to call myself a psychic. I don't need to create invisible realms. I can simply be, know that I am this, that I am this intelligent, amazing physical creature that can pick up cues and clues about you. Very sensitive about its environment. I just think that we underplay our natural innate animal sensitivities, and we give it and we assign it to invisible stuff.
But for some reason, we talk about natural intelligence that we're born with. A lot of us wouldn't know how to just instinctively build shelter or what berries we can eat. We don't have what animals all seem to have on this planet. We seem very much out of place, humanity.
Well, I don't know if that would be the necessary conclusion. I mean, we evolved in such a way to build things, and we've been doing this a long time. That's why we now have skyscrapers.
So do you think technology is transforming humanity? Is it taking us farther away from what's human?
No, I think it's evolution. I don't think there's one single thing that's not a part of a whole picture. We're going to learn, you know, we're making mistakes all the time. It's the nature of natural selection. You know, we're making big mistakes. Hopefully we don't destroy ourselves. Hopefully we make it to being an advanced civilization and we really start seeding the stars, you know, but there's no guarantees. That's I think, a really important thing to understand, because spiritual realities always seem to come up with some sort of guarantee, and I think it really gets people to, it relieves them somehow and relaxes them and gives them an excuse to not have to do anything. And I really think that once we wake up and realize that we're really on a boat and it isn't as safe as we think it is, that maybe we're going to start really taking action and really waking up. You know, I think it's absurd that we still have our own species starving to death. You know, I don't know how many of our species has died during this interview. It's absurd. We could fix this problem. But as long as you got people that are waiting for Jesus to handle the problem, as long as you got people that are saying, oh, this person chose this so that they could, you know, experience starvation, I'm just saying that all of this stuff has not done anything for us, and I don't really need to really, I mean, I just know I can make a change and make a decision today right here. I mean, I don't have to have all the answers. If I want to fix something in my house, I can do it. I can make a decision, I can do it. And I think that humanity needs to wake up out of the dream world and look at their home here and take care of it. I mean, what part of John Lennon's, you know, Imagine There's No Heaven do we not get?
Yeah, unfortunately, starvation happens in nature. It's brutal out there. Herbert Spencer, survival of the fittest, right? So
yes.
Either you have to learn to make your food or freaking apply yourself and try and do something and not wait around for everyone else.
Right. Well, the beauty of it, too, is we have the sciences of epigenetics and brain plasticity. And so we're learning that our thoughts actually do affect our evolution and our genes. And so, you know, I think that is why it's so important that people expand their minds radically and really start to step out of their comfort zone and really begin to live their lives vastly. I have a friend of mine recently who, actually not recently, but in 2012, she hiked from the PCT trail from Mexico to Canada. It changed her life, 2,660 miles, you know. It's like, how many people are busting out of the herd mentality and really living their life, you know, and really making radical changes, you know? How many people, right?
Yeah.
I think this is what I want, you know, this is part of what I'm doing, is to spark that, you know? How about come up with the idea that you're going to solve a big aspect of world hunger, you know?
Unfortunately, right now, people wait for government. They wait for some other authority to do it for the world.
Yeah, and they tend to also blame government when, in my opinion, it isn't the few elite that are the problem, it's the 7 billion people that are asleep. And so I like to say, if you really are upset about it, then get up and do something.
Sure, exactly.
I mean, during the day, I have a irrigation business, and, you know, a year ago I wrote a book, and I'm working, and I'm trying to do something with this, you know, and I don't have a lot of money, I don't have, you know, I mean, I'm pretty much, you know, paycheck to, you know, bill to bill, and I utilize my time, and I'm just saying that we all can do really amazing things if we put our mind to it, and the world's really waiting for us to make changes, and that's the only time we've ever really seen any real change is when people actually did something. You know, it isn't about sitting there and sending out good thoughts. You know, I instead of taking the time to sit there and send out good thoughts, why don't you take that time out and move yourself in the direction of doing something?
Yeah. Yeah, people are all excited about Russell Brand's Utopia. Meanwhile, Fukushima is spreading global radiation and spewing death everywhere it touches, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, thanks for sending me that. It was interesting. It's funny because I clicked right in the middle of the video and it landed right on that one spot where you were talking about that.
what a hell. For people that don't know, we could play the clip. Russell Brand is advocating joining church and state, and he's a very new agey kind of guy. So think of where that could go. Eventually that would be what, thought police?
Right. Yeah, and it sounded to me like he's been, I don't know, but it sounded very David Icke-ish because he was talking, I forget what word he used about, he called his body some funky, called it a puppy? Some sort of puppy?
Like, yeah, it was something similar to flesh bag or something like that.
And I just, and the way I look at it from what I write in my book is that is called divine narcissism. That is the invisible identity that the primate is trapped in. And this identity, the primate becomes the identity, and the identity basically subverts the body to stay alive. It's a form of narcissism. And so it's always subjugating the body. And I also think this is why we harm animals, and this is why we harm our planet. This is my theory, that it starts here with this inner narcissism. And when we begin to really, really assign source to this beautiful primate biology that we are, I think we begin to have a lot more compassion for animals, a lot more compassion for everything in the natural world. We stop making excuses. It's fine. You want to believe, if you want to believe that Jesus is going to, come get you later, or you want to believe that you're going to fly in a spaceship when you die, that's fine. I think we all have our subjective rights. Those are very, very important. To have our own, whatever our fantasy or whatever our conviction is, that's fine. Where I step in is I don't think certain things should be taught to children, and I don't think certain things should be taught in making people who are making policy decisions. I don't want somebody who believes in Armageddon to be making policy decisions for me.
Yeah.
And I think that a child should grow up to a cognitive age, and that the parents should respectfully say, "This is what we believe. We believe that Daryl Anka channels Bashar, was an invisible being from somewhere else, or we believe that Jesus, God requires human sacrifice." And then the child can think about it and go, "Okay, well, I and there's nothing wrong with that." But instead what you have is you have programming. That old scripture in the Bible, train up a child in the way it should go, and when it's older it will not depart from it. Well, yeah, that's called programming. And so that's why I say in my book that's child abuse.
So, I don't know if you've looked into Gurdjieff, but he claims that humans are born without a soul. So, do you think, and then we make it throughout the course of our lifetime. So, is there no soul involved either? Or is consciousness soul?
I don't know. Is it possible that each one of us are born and we develop a soul, and then when we die, somehow this invisible soul floats off the brain into another dimension?
Well, if it's energy doesn't die.
No, energy goes back into stardust. When we die, we completely, we go back into stardust. So yeah, energy is always changing form. I think a lot of this soul stuff comes from a sense and belief of separation, which I think is inherited from our dualistic tradition.
Well, some people claim that there was a catastrophic event that actually happened on the planet to create this schism within us.
Who's that?
Barbara Henkel talks about it.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah, I know that Drumbelow Melchizedek also talks on these lines of various things, but just from an evolutionary point of view, with the amount of evidence that we have, okay, one can clearly see, understand who they are as a natural human primate, and can clearly, from a human point of view, right now, in 2013, can know that they have grown out of the earth and they share a genetic connection with all of life on the planet. Okay, so just that all by itself is a whole bunch of, you know, a whole sense of belonging. I just don't think that most people have really, really inhaled that and really comprehended it. So what's the need to have an invisible counterpart? What's the need of constantly being obsessed with this invisible? I think that really a lot of this comes from the fear of death, the death anxiety. Because if you think about it, if indeed you are nature, you are born, you grow, and you deconstruct. Okay, well, there was no one separate from any of that. You are this life that you're seeing. So you are born, you live, and you deconstruct. You're not separate from any of this. You're stardust, animated as a human primate on planet Earth. I think it's beautiful. There's no separation. But the minute we enter into this whole thing of invisible counterpart, it's kind of like, oh, really? I mean, here we go. I mean, I don't mind sitting over having a cocktail and speculating about all that. I think it's fun. But I don't think it's a necessary thing to be angst about, because everybody, like, we go to sleep at night. No one chooses to go to sleep. Sleep happens. You know, hunger happens. There's very little that you have anything to do with here. And the same with the returning back into stardust. So I really think it's really what the ancient traditions, when they get into no self, the void, once we really awaken out from the conceptualized self and identification with the self, that we are really free. And it really doesn't matter what the heck happens at that point.
So if we don't redefine God and spirituality, will the human race survive?
I don't know. We'll find out. But I know that it's important. It's important that we wake up into the moment. We wake up into the real world and begin to stop leaving all of the problems to authorities. You know, we need to stop it. We need to wake up. We need to grow up, educate ourselves, get involved, begin to change the world, and realize that it isn't, you know, it hasn't shown itself in the past. I mean, they've been waiting for Jesus to return forever, you know, and religion's kind of a no-brainer when you really look at it nowadays. So it's like, I just think that we need to really see that we can make changes by growing up and making the decision to do so.
Winding down here, but subjective, objective, how can we really be sure what is what? Memories, feelings, beliefs, it seems like it can all be contorted depending on where you're standing. I'm thinking kind of Michael Talbot's holographic universe. How can we be sure that what we're feeling and seeing is real?
Well, where do you feel it?
I'm asking you.
Well, I'm answering the question with a question. What are you feeling right now?
About what subject? About apes? Everything in me screams, no, that is not where I came from.
All right. So how does that make you feel?
It just makes me feel like there's a separation when I talk to you, because we have this big gaping hole between us.
Okay, but how does it feel to you? Does it feel a good thing? Like it's good that we're stirring things up and disagreeing, or does it feel sad?
No, I think it's a good thing to disagree. I think it's a good thing to bring things out and actually look at them, of course.
Okay, so you can't really define one feeling right now.
Well, it's a feeling that whenever I hear you say apes, everything in me says untrue.
Are you ashamed of being an ape?
No, if that was true, then fine, I'd deal with it, but... From
well, what if
everything
it was?
That's screaming in my DNA, the cells in my body that are constructing the various tissues and the organs, all of them are screaming, no. Panspermia feels right to me. Something was distributed here through asteroids, comets, planetoids. Right. Something else happened on this planet.
But so
it ain't Darwin.
So you wouldn't look at a primate cousin and be proud to share that genetic lineage? You'd feel ashamed?
Well, I don't even think it's real. So that question doesn't work for me.
Interesting. Okay. Well, my point with what you're feeling was to define a feeling, which the feeling could be, I'm feeling a nothing when you ask that question. And then the next question would be, well, where are you feeling that nothing? Well, I'm kind of feeling it in my chest. So the answer to your question when it comes to what's subjective, objective, I could really, you know, if we had more time, I mean, really just walk you through just answering those questions, and you can see that even a thought, if you close your eyes and you think of a particular thought, like a green triangle or a dog, and then you point to it, and you open your eyes, you'll find out that you're pointing somewhere within proximity of your head, for most people. So, yes, the subjectivity is a local phenomenon, and then objectivity, well, you know, one can just go out and, you know, walk into a wall. It's a consistent information. You can find 10 people run into a wall, and every one of them will hit it hard and fall to the ground, mostly. So.
And as you wrote in your book, too, quantum physics is basically quackery, right?
No, not at all.
No,
I think how it's defined through the New Age, how it's been contorted, is wrong. You know, quantum physics is quantum physics. It's amazing science. And look, we've got dark matter. You know, 98% of our universe we can't even see. Does that validate everything that Theosophy says, and that there's invisible beings flying around, or that there's, you know, no aliens out there? Or, you know, it doesn't. It just means that that's what it is. We're still learning about it. Most likely, the universe is teeming with life, but that those life forms evolved as well on those planetary systems. So quantum physics, of course, is what it is. It's a solid science, but the problem is with a lot of the metaphysical community is they take that which is on a quantum level and they apply it to on a micro level, they apply it to a macro level, and that's where they get all screwed up with it. And there was a debate between Deepak Chopra and Sam Harris and Michael Shermer, and I forget the woman's name, a very beautiful sage-like woman. She's new age, forget her name. But anyway, and it was kind of embarrassing for Deepak Chopra, because they really had to correct him on what he was throwing out there with science. And he says, you know, it takes a long time to understand science and to understand these sciences, you know, particular sciences. So to throw anything, just stuff that people don't know, out into an audience to make your point is really, I think, disingenuous to the audience. But Sam Harris was explaining to him how he had got this particular part wrong with quantum physics. And I'd have to read what I wrote again. But anyway, it's a solid science. Yeah, it's just taken out of context many times.
Have you been following the Ancient Aliens series on History Channel? Or we've had a lot of those guests on Red Ice as well. Do you think there is life out there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'd have no proof of it, but look at the life that's teeming on Earth. I mean, just the way nature does what it does, we live in this, you know, absurdly massive universe. So most likely it's teeming with life. I think, yeah, I've said that a couple times in the past hour. I have also looked at, anytime I look at something like Ancient Aliens, I'll also look at debunking Ancient Aliens now. Whereas before, I would never do that. Now I look at both sides of the picture, because I'm more interested in what's true than I am in thinking for myself than I am in what I wish is true. And I have a lot of information on my website, unspirituality.com. I have a lot of information about Zachariah Sitchin, where a lot of New Age ideology came out of.
Sure, yeah, we know who he is.
Mm-hmm. Sitchin, yeah, and I actually have some information on there on how, from actual Sumerian scholars who show where he actually got the actual text wrong.
Yeah, like Sitchinwaswrong.com, I think, or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, but I see, the thing of it is, I'm not trying to be right and make others wrong. I'm not really interested in that. I'm interested in what's true more than I am what I wish to be true. And that's been really my heart my whole life. I'm not where I'm at now because I thought it would be a really good idea to disagree with all the spiritualists. You know, I'm just compelled by what I'm learning, you know, and so, yeah.
Alrighty. Well, when do you think we can see macro evolution? When will we see a dog evolving into another kind of species, a non-dog?
Well, I don't know how to, I mean, evolution is so tremendously slow. You know, we're so busy thinking about invisible realms. I think we should, you know, people should take a good 6 months, sit down, and just meditate on evolution. 6 million years, you know, 4.6 billion years. I think it's fascinating. I think it'll slow us down. I think we'll be in a meditative state just contemplating evolution. Life is very sure, very slow, very, you know, I mean, you can call it God, whatever you want to call it, but it's very sure and very slow. And we're a tiny, tiny, tiny little blip in the evolutionary continuum.
Yeah, so maybe some aliens did come to Earth and terraform everything and change the planet's environment. Never know.
Well, sure. I mean, if we find evidence for that, why not?
Actually, anaerobic microbes. Look into that, Lloyd Pye. Cambrian explosion. Well, I mean, these are amazing, these anaerobic microbes that basically produce oxygen, but they don't need it. So this could have given birth to the Cambrian explosion, which Lloyd Pye gets into.
Sure. I'm more open for a parent race having seeded us, but I'm fascinated with the evidence that's come forth with evolution, and I really think it's important that people understand how much evidence we have. But also remain open, you know, remain open to what's possible. If we're interested in what's true, you know, rather than what we want is true, we'll be less likely to get caught up in trying to validate our core beliefs. And that's usually what gets people in trouble. But, yeah, it's a fun, you know, this is fun. I mean, we're living in a time we've got information at our fingertips, you know, and we can explore and grow. Just the internet's just fascinating, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Well, thank you, Christopher, for coming on. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Lana, for inviting me so much.
Can you please give out your website, too, and let everyone know about your book?
Sure. It's unspirituality.com, and I have a lot of tools. I have a lot of information on there for pretty much a lot of the stuff that I've looked at that brought me to writing the book. And then my book is called Unspirituality, Permission to be Human, and it's on Amazon. And you can also, if you go to the website, you'll see right at the top both the Kindle and the paperback version, and then there's I have links from different countries as well that they can connect in and check out the book.
Alrighty, thank you. I'd encourage everyone to listen and watch Lloyd Pye's detailed presentations on intervention theory, which syncs up nicely with the panspermia theory and also the cosmic ancestry theory, a new theory that elaborates on panspermia, pertaining to evolution and the origin of life on Earth. It holds that life on Earth was seeded from space and that life's evolution to higher forms depends on genetic programs that come from space. It's a wholly scientific, testable theory for which evidence is accumulating. It would also make sense as to why isolated cultures all across the globe have built sculptures, made art, and have told stories of extraterrestrials and events in space. It seems the truth is somewhere in between mythology and nature. Personally, I don't believe for one Darwinian minute that I came from an ape. Do you? There was a guy. An underwater guy who controlled the sea. Got killed by 10 million pounds of sludge from New York and New Jersey.
Yeah. devil is six. The devil is six.